I still can't hear you, unfortunately.
Okay, never mind. So normally we just have questions and then we'll see what happens. Have you got any questions to kick off with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, you go ahead, Marianne. Marianne?
I would very much like to know about the mountains. I've seen the mountains. I've been over there. I've received. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I've received my crown and scepter. But it's just, how do you rule? How do you do that?
Okay. Well.
Do you go there every day?
Yeah. Well, mountains are. Places of authority within the kingdom that represent your spheres of godly influence and the things that God has called you to administer. And they may be personal spheres, so you may have spheres relating to family or work or other things. It may be ministry spheres. They may well be local spheres over a region or an area or a town. Let me just mute you a moment, then we can cut the background. That's it. So they are places where it really belongs to you. And what I've found is that the seven mountains that normally are associated with our spheres of influence and kingdom calling are ruled from one mountain, which is basically who we really are. It's our place of authority where we outwork our destiny in the heavenly realms. And so that's in the realm of the kingdom of God, and we are called to bring light and authority and godly authority into that realm to administer from there so that heaven can be manifested on earth. And so there are things we can do here, but there are things we need to do there first. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And so those mountains are the places where we have been authorized to operate. And the things, there are many things you can do there. Every day I go there, but normally before I go to engage with God around the ark in the Holy of Holies to gain revelation of his will and what he would want me to do today. And so I don't go to my mountain often just wondering what to do. I usually have a pre-directed things that God has given me so that I can begin to outwork that there, having known this is God's will for me today. And also, sometimes you need a mandate from God to outwork that kingdom throne position. And so sometimes there are specific things that God will direct you, and you get a mandate or an authorization from a particular court in the heavenly realms. In one of those courts in the heavenly realms, you receive those authorization papers, if you like, which is a mandate or a scroll, which gives you direction and releases your authority. That will enable you to have with confidence know what to do there. What I've found personally is that if I go to my mountain, then I need to be drawn to what sphere God wants me to operate in. So I tried initially to occupy all seven mountains and begin to go from one to another and to administer the different mountains of authority, but then discovered that this one mountain enables me to operate in all of them. But I need to know what I'm directing at any one time. So the things that you can do there, things that I've done there, is to call things into being. So you can use the authority and the creative power of words that you have to call things that God has mandated you to have authority over into being. So you can, just as God called things as that were not as if they were, there can be declarations of faith that carry the authority of the power and the creative power of God's word that will bring things out of the spiritual realm into the natural realm. And so we can create things, and they may be practical things, so we can create things like jobs, or we can call things forth in terms of ministries or areas. We can maybe call forth things over regions or over localities that need to come into being. Lots of things there that you obviously need to know what God is giving you to do to be able to do them. Also, from that position of authority, you can make prophetic declarations of the maybe the mandates you've been given. Maybe there are things like declarations of intent for particular areas where we may well call forth people to come into alignment. We may well call forth ministries to come into alignment. We may call forth different things that God has instructed us, and by speaking them out into in the realm of heaven, angels will take those words that we've spoken, and when we speak God's words, and they will begin to work on our behalf, so they can begin to orchestrate and maneuver situations or circumstances so that they can then open up opportunities for those things to take place. So it says in Amos that God does nothing without revealing things to his prophets. And that's so prophets can speak those things out into the spiritual realm that then enable angels particularly to take those words that have been directed by God and begin to work on our behalf behind the scenes. And we can also, from those mountain thrones, we can dispatch angels. Particularly if we have a mandate from the court of angels or we've engaged there, we can dispatch angels. The canopy of angels, of the 10 canopies of angels that are over us, are over us when we're on our throne. And so we can engage with any of the different canopies of angels and dispatch them to do the different things that they're called to do. And that does need an understanding of what the different angels do and the different in the different realms and the different canopy to be able to do that. But that's all possible from those mountain thrones. We can also use the keys of the kingdom, which are to bind and to loose things. Jesus authorized the use of the keys of the kingdom. And when we use those things, we are binding things to the purpose of God and to the will of the God and to the will of the kingdom. And so we're bringing things back into alignment with what God says. And we can also loose things from the things which are hindering, obstructing, binding things which are, they bind things up to stop things being at work. So we can loose those things and we can destroy the enemy's works that are hindering or blocking what God wants to be done. But we need to direct those specific keys of the kingdom to specific things. And those can be to people, it can be to situations. We can only do that according to God's will and not our own. We can't bind someone to what we want them to do because that will be control and manipulation. But we can bind them to God's will for their life or to their destiny or for the purpose that God has created them to. It's things that we can speak into situations and people to bring change and transformation as part of that. One of the other things we can do from that mountain throne is to do prophetic acts. There may be things that God calls us to do with weapons that has an effect in that realm. We can particularly deal with spiritual entities that are looking to obstruct. Usually to get on a throne, you have to deal with dragons or giants and things that have hindered, particularly the other 7 thrones. You can engage with the angel, particularly the angel that's there, which has been maintaining that throne for you, waiting for you to come to a place of maturity where you can engage it. that angel is there to help you in the protocol of the kingdom. So if you need to know what to do, then ask the angel which is associated with your throne, which is your angel, which is in heaven, one of the Ben Elohim angels. They will be able to, that one will be able to help you. And so it's good to discern what the angel is, to find out what the name of the angel is that is associated with your throne, and then begin to engage in relationship there, because that angel can give us wisdom. Also, the seven spirits of God are there to tutor us and train us in our position within that throne. So it's our position of authority, and they have a particular role in equipping us to be able to function on that throne effectively and with power and authority there. So it's a process. When we first get on that mountain, some people think, well, what am I supposed to do? Well, the whole process of knowing what our responsibility is in the kingdom, and knowing that's a responsibility as sonships, is to rule and establish God's dominion on earth as it is in heaven, then we have to learn how to engage the different courts, the different judicial systems. You know, every kingdom has a way of operating, and God's kingdom is no different. There are protocols and procedures of the kingdom that we need to understand and then operate in, and we learn that by going to the different courts and finding out what it is and how we operate there. So often if we're called to operate in lordship, which is the first level of kingdom authority in that realm, then we need to operate under the authority of kingship. So the laws and the things that have already been established by the king, we then administer as lords under his kingship. But as we mature in our dominion and authority, then we learn to operate in kingship, then we can begin to make laws in the court of kings, and then those kingly laws can be established and can be outworked. But it's all a process of being tutored and trained and taught in the ways of the kingdom. And we have to draw near to God to that, and we have to be willing to seek him and to pursue the relationships that we need to establish that revelation that we need to function as kings. And God often gives us forerunner experiences. So he will show us things or take us somewhere that will be an introduction into a different realm or a different area of authority, and then we need to begin to learn how to work it out and outwork it. But it is a ongoing process and journey of discovery. We don't tend to get it all in one go. And we have to learn to pull together the different strands of the things that God is showing us so that we can learn to function there. Because I know a lot of people are having encounters but are not really identifying it with their responsibility for rule. And knowing what the seven mountains are key to understanding how you're going to administer there. So, yeah, I would say it is somewhere we should be going every day. But we need to learn what to do there, and we need to engage and draw near to God so that God can give us the revelation we need to be able to function there effectively. Because once we're given responsibility, then we're accountable for that responsibility, and that accountability is serious. And so God doesn't want us to be operating immaturely there. So in a sense, I would encourage people to engage with the process of righteousness and intimacy with God, which changes our heart and prepares our heart for responsibility, so that we learn to administer the kingdom with righteousness and justice. If we try and administer it with justice without the righteousness, it can get into trouble. By bringing too much judgment. We can judge things, but we have to judge them from righteousness and in love. And so that process comes as we draw near to God, as we learn to engage him around his throne, the throne of grace, as we learn to engage him in his garden, as we learn to engage him around the arc of his presence and discern there what he's giving us revelation of in his will. So if that gives you some clue about mountains. Okay. Christian, yeah, well, I'll try it.
Those four faces of God, what do they represent? Each one must represent something, because it's four different faces. And when we are drawn to or resonate with one of them more than with the others, what are we exactly drawn to?
Okay, yeah, well, interesting question. recent times I've been drawn much more to come around the arc of God's presence and to engage with the yod and the hey and the vav of the hey of the name of God, which brings you into this resonant agreement and harmony with him. And in my experience, that has been represented with the four faces of God. And the cherubim carry all the faces of those four faces, and you look at the representation of those faces, the lion and the ox and the eagle and the man, and they represent attributes of God's character and nature, in which when we are in him, we can then speak out through his voice and speak out with the voice of the lion. And the lion represents kingship, and the lion, in a sense, in creation, when I saw creation, it was like the lion roaring a song of creation into being. And so when we begin to speak out through the face of the lion, we begin to speak creatively in a kingship function. And sometimes you get a sense of you won't need to roar, because something comes up within your innermost being and you begin to roar out something into the realm of the kingdom. And so we can function in all those four faces. Personally, I've seen the faces that represent the lion represents the kingly function. For me, I don't know, people see this differently. For me, the ox represents a prophetic function, and the eagle, the apostolic function, and then the man, the priestly function. And so there are times when we speak from that perspective. So we speak from the prophetic perspective, that we're calling things forth, we're speaking things forth. Sometimes we speak from the apostolic perspective, that perspective is about engaging in the blueprints of heaven and bringing the godly order of heaven into this realm. The priestly function would be where we're looking for agreement between heaven and earth. So there's an intercessory function where we're looking to bring earth and heaven into alignment. And I've seen that the three functions of the lion and the eagle and the ox come and bring this bench of three agreement, but actually God is looking for man's agreement to bring the fourth, which opens up a window for God's glory to come through. So we're looking to open up these everlasting doors that are in heaven, open up the windows of heaven, and for that you need the function of the three, which bring that godly government, and you need the agreement of the fourth, which opens up this window, which brings blessing. So a number of times recently I've gone into the realm of the kingdom, and in some of the courts have been given specific direction from God and been given scroll mandates. I have had them authorized in the Court of Chancellors, and then I've brought them in back into this realm and look for agreement on earth so that we can open up the window. Because you can have things in heaven, but you need heaven and earth to come into agreement, where the power of agreement is great. And it releases the opening up of the windows for heaven to come through into earth. And so you have to get that. And for that here, what we tend to do in our bench of three that operates here in the church, we establish things in the heavens. Often I come with an apostolic blueprint or direction that God gives me, I bring it to the other two that sit with me, and they carry a kingly and a prophetic function also. And we take that back into heaven and look for heavenly agreement for the three of us. And once we have that established, and usually it gets sealed in the court, and you get a seal of authorization, we then bring that into this realm. We take it to our council, which we have a group of 12 that is starting to function, that administers our seven mountains and our apostolic resource mountains there together as 12, and we look for agreement. And once we have agreement between heaven and earth, then we then go back together, all 12 of us, and we go back into that court, and then we look for strategy, and God often then will show us specific things. And so I've also done that on a regional basis, where I operate in a regional bench of three. And we did this on Saturday. We met up on Saturday, and we met also with seven of us meeting together, and we again administered certain things in heaven and look for agreement on earth, that then we could go back and see that outworked. And then God starts to release strategy and shows you the how. Once you have the what, then you need to know the how. So you need the wisdom then to be able to know the timing of things and how you then release those things on earth. And, you know, but the revelation and the protocol of those things, once you begin to engage in the courts, you suddenly start to get an understanding of how these things work. And so the coming into alignment just means that we begin to speak out through that face of God, and we begin to either speak out in the function of the prophet or the king or the apostle or the man, the priest, and then that brings godly order and blessing, and it brings authority, because we're in him as well as him being in us. We're in him. And then we can begin to see things from his perspective. This is really what the alignment's about. We see things from the kingly perspective, or we see things from the prophetic perspective, or from the apostolic perspective, or from the priestly perspective. And there's no competition between any of those. They all function together, but they come with slightly different perspective understandings. And when you bring them together, you get a full perspective. Because when you see the four faces of God on the cherubim, they're continually revolving. You can't just pick out one and it stays still. There's this continual working together and functioning together of those offices that needs to take place. And so, you know, the more time we spend around the ark of God's presence, the more we will begin to see his will for us and our destiny outwork from those perspectives. And often we do have one area that we're often resonating with more. You know, I often resonate with the eagle much more than the others, but I have also been in the others, and I just go every time and I begin to get into this rhythm of heaven, which is this symbol of infinity, the figure of eight symbol, which is like going in and coming out and going in and coming out, in a continuous function, which is like the breath of life. You know, we breathe out the yod of God's presence because it's already in us, and then we breathe back in the hay and breathe out the vav and breathe in the hay, and that whole thing is just a continual function of coming into heaven and coming out of heaven, going into heaven and coming out of heaven. So bringing what's in heaven out through our lives on earth. And so we're not in one place or the other. We're in this continual flow of being in both at the same time. And so I think that function around the faces of God is a real key one for where we are at this time in prophetic timing, because God is releasing this sound from heaven. He's releasing this sound which is drawing people to come into alignment. It's drawing people to come to that place where we're able to engage in these realms and then begin to see things transformed. It's like when creation took place, or recreation, you know, the Spirit of God vibrated over the waters and brought the waters back into order. When on the day of Pentecost, there was a sound like a mighty rushing wind. It was a sound they heard. They didn't see the wind, they heard the sound. And there is a vibrating frequency of that sound, which was an initiation of the church. There is a greater Pentecost that's yet to come, when that sound of a mighty rushing wind will be greater and more powerful and will transform and change things in this realm in a way which we are only just beginning to prophetically catch a glimpse of. But it will both shape us and begin to transform us and our lives, but will also begin to shake. Because in Hebrews, where it talks about the shaking of all things, that sound of a right rushing wind is a vibrating frequency which begins to shake things. Everything is made up of vibrating frequency. At a very basic level of string theory, everything is vibrating strings of energy, which is God's voice. And so when he releases this sound or this harmony, or people are hearing things, there is a term which is, I think it's synesthesia, and it's really being able to see things from a multitude of different perspectives, like we can hear color, or we can see sound, or we can feel fragrances. Our whole being is beginning to be drawn back to Adam's, what Adam had in the beginning, where there wasn't a separation of the senses like we have, and people are being released into that. And so in heaven, everything is living, sounds, colors, fragrances, formula, numbers. See, people are seeing and feeling colors, and God is speaking to them in a language of color, or in the language of numbers, in terms of numerology. And all these things are part of this shaking and this bringing things into order. Because these sounds, this frequency from heaven is calling. It's like a wooing of God's children back into sonship. It's an awesome thing. And, you know, I've been hearing this sound and feeling this sound and being drawn to this symbol of, you know, infinity, you know, over the last few years. And I know others are also being drawn, and others are drawn to certain colors, they're drawn to certain mathematical formula, and all those things are to bring us back into wholeness. And all the bandwidths of frequency which have been lost over the years, because of the things that have happened, lost through Satan's fall, lost through the fall of man, lost through Tower of Babel, lost the flood, they are going to be restored. And the bandwidth of our understanding and connection with the Spirit and what the realm of heaven is, there is going to be a great restoration that's going to take place. And God is calling that Joshua generation to hear that sound, to be ready to equip the next generation in these supernatural things. And so that's why people are responding. Some people don't know why they're being drawn, but they're just being drawn by something that's being released out of heaven. And God is looking for those forerunners who will hear that sound, or be drawn to it, or will see it, or smell it, or taste it, or touch it in some way, that it is just opening up a realm of heaven for them. And I think the revelation of that will become more clear as we go forward. It's like this sound or symbol is being released. You know, there was a film many years ago by Steven Spielberg which was called Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and in that film there were people who were drawn to a set of musical notes, and there were others that were drawn to the shape of a mountain. and everything in them was drawing them to an encounter. In that film, it was an encounter with aliens, but in a sense, the symbolism is still the same. There is this sound that's been drawing people, and they didn't know what it was, but it's been drawing them to a heavenly encounter, which will bring them back into godly alignment and release them into sonship. And you know, there are some awesome things that God is releasing into the prophetic realm at this point in time, which are going to cause a major shaking of everything, including us. Because we are a frequency. You know, the Earth is a frequency. It's usually called Schumann's frequency. I think it's 7.8 megahertz or something. But when we're out of alignment with that frequency, we can get into ill health and other things. When we come back into alignment with those frequencies, they bring us back into wholeness and bring us back into health. And so, yeah, we're in a really exciting time right now where many, many things are getting unveiled and unleashed. You know, I'm in the process at the moment of just meditating around some stuff. I've had some downloads of things that speak about what's coming up in the next couple of years that will bring around this shaking and will bring a more clarity to the sound that people are hearing, so that when people get drawn, they're not lost wondering what it's all about, but actually there is a clear pathway of engagement that people will follow that can and take them into these encounters, which will be so transformational and so bringing them into authority and power in the kingdom. So, yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Thanks a lot. Okay. It's really exciting.
Okay. Anyone else got a question?
Could you just repeat the question, Valtron? The question you had? Because I just came in the midst of it.
Okay. Yeah, the question was about the four faces of God.
Yeah, okay. Something didn't really work. I don't know why, because I left it from last time, so I struggled, but the Lord helped me, I guess, to find it.
Okay, so have you got something you'd like to ask, Regina?
It's not a very deep thing, but I'm listening again to the transformation MP3s of you, and I was listening through the prophetic words, and one of it was like you are a place where people can come and get, where do I have it? Just a moment. Yeah, for multiplication, people for multiplication. It's just a question. If you see us coming to you and communicating also today, like, do you see it in this kind of fulfilling of this prophetic word?
Yeah. Some of the prophetic words that we receive are there to bring us into alignment with them. And, you know, the prophetic words, you know, some of the things that I've been spoken over me or I've heard, you know, I've spent time preparing and being transformed so that I was ready to fulfill them. And so there's a timing function with prophetic words that we have to be careful that we observe. And so that they stir us and they cause us to pursue and desire, but we don't necessarily try and make something happen. And so these mentoring sessions that I'm doing and the way that God's opening up these opportunities to help people and to serve people in this is part of a prophetic fulfillment of what God spoke, you know, over a few years ago about multiplication. And it's just God does things in different ways. You know, I wouldn't, 2 or 3 years ago, I would have had no idea that I would be doing this type of thing, because, you know, you see an apostolic resource center, you see it like people come to you, and you see, and some of that will probably still take place, and I know God will draw people, and we want to, you know, establish ultimately a supernatural ministry school and different things, but actually God always gives forerunner experiences. So what I'm doing now in being able to reach to people all over the world and engage with people is a prophetic outworking. It's just I would have never seen it working this way, but I had to take steps of obedience to be ready for this. And it wasn't until I had some encounters with God and that opened up my heart to a greater and wider sphere that these things opened up, and God began to speak to me about opening doors that he had, or walking through doors that he had opened, that I was somewhat reticent to do, because I know the implication of when you begin to engage with people around the world, you know, you have to then begin to manage your time, and you have to then be careful what you're doing. You know, I'm still involved here in ministry with the church here, so I've still got responsibilities here, but that those things have to be balanced with wanting to fulfill God's call for us as a ministry here to be able to be an apostolic resource. And so that multiplication of that resource has been taking place recently through these mentoring sessions and in being able to engage with people and help them. I would see it as a prophetic fulfillment of some of the words God spoke a few years ago, and I'm sure there are other ways that he's going to fulfill those things in the future. You know, we can't put God in a box. We just have to take a step of obedience and trust that he knows that what he's doing, which he does, and so often it will be in surprising ways that prophetic things get unveiled and then fulfilled. So as I say, you know, I certainly didn't see myself doing these type of things 3 years ago when I received a number of those prophetic words, you know, but you know, God saw it, and God was preparing me and preparing others so that we could make these connections in the kingdom. You know, so there are people who are now hearing and ready to hear that sound, and who are hearing it, who now we need to begin to connect up together, and we then begin to need to support each other and mentor each other for what's to come. You know, so that each, you know, for me, God has called me to raise up a Joshua generation and be part of raising that up around the world with others, because many people are talking about this Joshua generation, those who carry a different spirit and those who are willing to hear God and uncompromisingly be willing to obey in spite of giants and flooded rivers and big cities and every other thing that might be in the way, but to believe God is bigger than that, bringing us into our inheritance so that we can, as forerunners who've spied out the land, who know what's there, can then bring a whole generation of others into their inheritance and then see a transformation of our whole creative order, really back into a place where Jesus can come for a church without spot and wrinkle, ready, prepared for his return. Having fulfilled their function, having fulfilled their destiny and the call of the church, so that he is able to come after the restoration of all things. And once we've restored all things, then he will return, but not until. And so there's plenty of restoration that needs to take place. And he's looking for willing participants in that process. And I feel privileged to be part of that. And if I can serve and help raise up this Joshua generation groups, then you know that's what I would love to be able to do. And I believe God wants to establish benches of three apostolic councils over regions, towns, nations. And I know those people are in place waiting to hear the sound. And once we start proclaiming the sound and blowing the trumpets, if you like, and heralding this new season of what God is doing, people are waiting. They just don't know it yet. But once they hear that sound, they will begin to resonate with it and be drawn to it as well. So God is raising up a group of people who are going to be able to blow the trumpets and draw in another generation. I'm not talking about an age generation. I'm just talking about people who will come into what their destiny is, just like Joshua brought the children of Israel. The old generation died, and unfortunately I think there are a lot of things which have to, the old order of things has to end for these new seasons and new orders of things to be established. And problem with many Christians is they hold on to the old and are afraid to let it go to establish the new. But they had to cross over out of the wilderness through the Jordan to come into the new. And all the miracles and provision and supernatural things that happened in the wilderness through Moses, they stopped. And then they were then responsible as sons to administer and manage the kingdom, the land that they'd been given, their inheritance. And they were no longer immature children. They were grown children who then were going to fight and take possession of the land. And so God is raising up those, and they're out there ready. And some of them are not saved yet, and some of them are saved, and some of them are in the process of transition from one place to another. But he wants people to be ready to sound those trumpets, because they will cause a resonant frequency around the world that's going to cause great transformation and change. And you know, hopefully I can do what I can in my bit to help people. And I'm sure there's many others out there who are also hearing from God, who are also doing their bit as well, so that we can see God's purposes outworked and Jesus glorified and him getting his full inheritance, because you know we are his inheritance, you know, and he wants us as his inheritance, you know, and he wants the fullness of it. So yeah, so that's how I would see the fulfillment of those prophetic words being outworked at this point in time. So yeah, okay. Okay, any other questions?
You said once, if you just want to hang out with Jesus, you go to your garden, but if you want a revelation, you go into heaven. Where do you go there?
Okay. Well, I get revelation within my own garden, but it's usually to do with me personally, and it's to do with my relationship with him. It's to do with the transformation of my inner life, and it's that inner flow flowing from the inside out that produces the manifestation of the kingdom around me, which comes from that intimacy and that relationship and the Holy Spirit disclosing and revealing things to me. And so there's revelation there, and it is like that, you know, there's a tablecloth set before us, prepared for us to feast from. But that's most of that is about identity and intimacy and knowing who I am and coming into that fullness of understanding who I am as a son of God, out of relationship. Sonship is relationship. But there's also responsibility that you get as a son to rule. And so I then go, the place where I initially go is to go before the ark. So I go before the ark of God's presence in the holy place, within the tabernacle, in the heavenly realms. And I look to engage with the four faces of God. I look to engage with the manna and the tablets and the Aaron's rod. And so I look to engage with the manna, which is the will of God for me. So I begin to eat that. And as I've presented myself as a living sacrifice, then Jesus prepares me to serve him. And so then I can ask, what is your will? And I begin to get that resonant understanding. And so the revelation comes there. I'm also looking for my destiny as a son to be revealed in a greater dimension so that I will begin to be drawn towards what that destiny is. And so the tablets within the ark were representing the law that was written on those tablets of stone. But of course, now it says in Jeremiah that those things are now written on our hearts. And so I look to engage with God and engage with the frequency of who he is and look into his presence that manifests between the cherubim to see my destiny and to feel it and to let him have my heart so that he can begin to write or to reveal more. They're already written in my heart, but they need revealing. And so I found that as I've hung out there and just spent time in that rhythm of life around the ark, there I've found I've begun to become drawn to the things of my destiny. And so they begin to get revealed. And being able to engage in some of the things I'm doing now was a result of spending time there and it releasing me into feeling, yeah, I'm free to pursue this. Where I had a reticence to pursue certain things before, being around God's presence there, and it wasn't as if he said anything particularly about that. It's just he began to work in my heart to align the desires of my heart with the desires that he has for me around my destiny and around the things that he has for me to do, that just started to bring life, and they started to bring the desire started to come that enabled me to overcome the obstacles and the things that were the inconveniences and the things in my flesh that would have got in the way and, you know, may have hindered me. My desire was so strong spending time there that I was able to push through those things to obedience, really, and to doing the things that I was called to do. So, yeah, I would do, that's where I go to get that type of revelation. Now, as I said, you know, you then can go to courts and you can go to the angels and you can go to the seven spirits of God as well. But for my destiny, that's where I found my heart begun to be opened and my sort of scroll unfurled, if you like, for me to be able to engage with it. And going there is just the process of stepping into the door in heaven, which is open, and learning to present ourselves as living sacrifices so that we're in a place where we know can know the will of God to serve him and to worship him. Worship, service, the same word. Our worship is to just lay our lives down to fulfill his purpose for us. And, you know, as that pathway of engagement, once you've learnt the pathway and you've entered that pathway a number of times, then you become familiar with it and it's easier to engage. You know, so engaging in the different realms of heaven is just a process of yielding to a greater dimension of the Lordship of Jesus. So that is the sort of all the outside-in process. So you start on the outer courts and you go inwards until you can gauge around the ark of his presence. And then that leads you into going to your mountains or going to different courts as you directed. To me, that's just the central place of direction where I get the sense of where God wants me to go or what he wants me to do. And sometimes I just spend time hanging out there, you know, just feeling his presence. Sometimes it's very specific. I go with questions and I ask him things. But most of those things are to do with destiny and rule, whereas if I want things personally about my personal life, I'll go to the throne of grace. So I'll go to the river of life, or I'll go to the tree of life. So I'll go to different places depending on what I feel I need. Most of the relational stuff works for me within the flow into Eden and the garden and what's around there. But in this area, I'm really looking for rulership, so I'm looking for mandates and direction and prophetic decrees and things that will lead me to the rule of God, which comes out of the relationship. You can't rule without relationship, without it being dangerous. So I would establish the relational first and then begin to flow then into the function of rule from that place. But it is just a matter of stepping in. You know, and I know people, well, do I need to see it? Do I need to whatever? You know, step in by faith, and if you can see, that's great. If you can't see, just look to your other senses to engage and just allow the presence of God and His frequency to begin to change and bring us into harmony, because that's really what we're looking for, a harmonious coming together with the will of God that brings us into a resonance with Him that just frees us to just know what we're supposed to be doing, you know, and we can just sense that knowing in so many different ways, but we just know that we know, you know, then we can be confident because we just know, you know. And some people, well, how do you know? Well, you just know. When you know, you know. When you don't know, you don't know. And the more time you spend in drawing near into God, the more knowing it becomes, if you like.
Thanks a lot. That was very good.
Okay. Probably got time for one more question. And then.
Oh, if nobody wants to, I have another one. How active can we be? I'm sure there are some things where God has to take the lead, but in other things we can be active. Like, I know if you want to know our scroll, we can go and ask to see something. The four chambers of the heart would be another question. Is this God who takes the lead, or can I do something there, or how does that work?
Okay. Well, again, it's about desire. If the desire is in our heart, then we will begin to pursue it. Now, sometimes God stimulates that desire by encounter, by prophetic word, by revelation of some sort, and then He's looking for whether we will respond. And so when Jesus taught in parables, He was looking for those who were willing to go deeper into the meaning to discover what He was really saying. And He's looking for the same with us. Sometimes He will stimulate us in an area, and then He's looking for our response. And so we can definitely be proactive in pursuing anything that we have got revelation of, and pursuing deeper revelation of those things that we don't know enough about or haven't yet experienced. So, you know, I've taken people obviously into the garden, a lot into the garden of their heart, and to engage God there, because I've had lots of experiences there. There are these other four areas of the heart, which represented by the dance floor, which I have experienced all of those, but they flow out of the garden. It's like there's a definite flow, even to the natural heart, there's a flow. If you think of it, there is blood that comes from the lungs and comes into, I think, the right auricle, I think, of the top bit, whichever that bit of the heart it is, I think it's the auricle, and then it goes into the left ventricle, and then it goes out through the aorta to the whole body, and then it comes back via the vena cava into the left side of the heart, and then goes back through the pulmonary artery, I think, or vein, back into the lungs, and then comes back out of the pulmonary artery, and this cycle goes on and on all the time. And so there's this constant flow that takes place, representing the flow of life and the flow that we draw from the Spirit and we draw from the realm of heaven, and we bring that into our heart, and then that gets released from our heart to our body and around us, and then it comes back and we need more, and we've just this constant flow of life. And I feel that the garden is the first place where we encounter the life of heaven flowing, but there are other dimensions and places. Particularly the dance floor is where you engage with the DNA of God and the light of His presence, and He seems to come and dance around us in intimacy, and it begins to touch our DNA, and the information that's contained within His DNA in that place begins to transform ours. The soaking room is another place where fragrant oils were applied to. If you think of Queen Esther, she was spent a year being prepared to come into the presence of the king. And in that year, she had fragrances and perfumes and oils and all sorts of things applied to her body to prepare her. And so the soaking room is a place of deep, intimate preparation where we encounter again the fragrances and the perfumes of intimacy with God, which takes us to another level of our experience in preparing us as the bride. Because the bridal chamber is where consummation takes place, and so there's the marriage covenant, the ketubah of that marriage covenant document, where we make a contract to outwork our destiny with him, and it goes into a relationship there where consummation takes place and we're released into greater dimensions of sonship. Now, you know, those are places that we can pursue. And I think if there's a drawing in your heart towards something, my encouragement would be pursue. You know, and it's like, how do I do that? Well, by faith. Okay, yeah, I want to engage on the dance floor with the presence of God. So I'm by faith, I'm going to step from the garden of my heart to a deeper realm of intimacy where I'm going to open up myself to that engagement. If my heart is closed, and if my DNA is closed, then it's unlikely I'm going to be able to engage there. But when I'm really open, and I'm open for transformation, I'm open for genetic transformation, I'm open for my whole life to be transformed, then that realm will probably be something that you can engage in. Sometimes God will just take you there if you desire it. Just ask him. You know, if it's what you feel drawn to. And if you feel drawn to one of those things, you know, I've had encounters with all of them. They weren't necessarily in sequence, but I can look back and see what God was doing in the process. You know, and at some stage, you know, I probably will encourage and take people there. My encouragement now is around the garden and being able to cultivate and tend the garden, because that's where everything starts to spring forth. You know, the rivers came out of the garden and watered the earth, so they need to come out of the garden and engage with the rest of us to bring us into fullness and alignment. But yeah, that's a place or places where you can engage with God in a deeper level. But I think it does need a level of maturity, because once you get to the point where you're making your marriage contract with God and there's going to be consummation, then he is going to hold us in account. For me, that was a really challenging period of my life, where I went into what people would sometimes call the dark night of the soul. For me, it was just a darkness that really showed whether I was able or willing to trust God, and for him to be able to trust me, not on the basis of all I was going to do for him, but on the basis of my relationship with him alone. And so I got to a point where I had to take everything that I'd put on my marriage contract, which I had 69 things on my marriage contract, and every one of them died so that they could come back into life without me needing them or them being anything that I needed to fulfill anything in me. If they happened, that would be awesome. If they didn't happen, I would still love God and he would still love me. And we came to this consummation in our relationship where it's not about what I do for him or what he does for me. It's just about relationship and intimacy. And everything flows from there. And so there is a build-up that takes us to that place where we're ready for that. And then we can maybe go through the dark cloud and we can engage the face of God personally, which, you know, you don't go there until you're in a place where you can cope with it. You know, I've been there and just about managed to cope with it for a bit, but you know, I know there's still work to be done in me, and I know God is still in that process of doing it, which is why I'm still opening my heart up for transformation and asking God to every day to prepare me to serve him in whatever that takes and whatever he needs to do. Then I'm willing and I'm open, because I've gone through those processes that I know there is no condemnation and no guilt and no shame associated with admitting that, hey, I'm a work in process and the enemy's got nothing that he can bring, because I don't care. I've got no reputation. I'm not really interested I'm just interested in what God thinks. And so it's really easy for me to put my hands up and say, yeah, I accept an enemy accusation against me and in the courts, and I can be transformed there, because I don't sort of protect myself anymore. But it took some time to get to the place where I knew that God loved me, and it didn't matter if I ever did anything for him ever again, he still loved me. And it wouldn't matter to me either. Now that got me to the point where that freed me to be able to do whatever he wanted me to do. But the motivation of my heart is changed and different as a result of it. So everything flows from my relationship of intimacy. I don't do anything to try and get that intimacy. I've already got it. It's mine in intimate relationship with him in that marriage agreement that we have. But I pursue it. Yeah, my encouragement would be to pursue that whole process and start with the garden and then look to engage in those other places as you go forward. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, you're welcome.